Today, I want to think on the theme of the paradox of the cross and the paradox of Christ. It's difficult for the world to accept and understand Christianity. Jesus warned us about this in John chapter 15, verse 18. He said, "If the world hates you, keep in mind that it hated me first." There is a new term that's floating around. Perhaps you've heard of it. Christophobia. Look it up. Christophobia. Here's a definition of it. An irrational animosity towards Christ, Christians, or Christianity as a whole. It has become the mission of increasingly vocal groups of atheists, humanists, pantheists, and others to push Christianity out of the public square. First, we have serious threats to Christians. I just saw on the internet yesterday, and it still made like one of the headlines on Fox News internet this morning, that there are twice as many Christians killed last year as there was the year before. 1,213 confirmed deaths in Syria, Nigeria 612, Pakistan 88. There's an estimated 50,000 to 70,000 Christians who live in concentration camps in North Korea. The federal government has listed evangelical Christianity as a top terrorist threat. Homeland Security's National Consortium for the Study of Terrorism and Responses to Terrorism in January released a report entitled "Hotspots of Terrorism and Other Crimes in the United States." November 20th, 2013, a retired Long Branch police officer was arrested in a New Jersey mall for distributing tracts. A Phoenix man has been sentenced to 60 days in jail to stop hosting Bible studies in the privacy of his home in violation of city codes. In San Juan Capistrano, California, city officials say city code section 9.1301 prohibits religious organizations in residential neighborhoods without a conditional use permit, sometimes which is very expensive. There has been home Bible studies that have been stopped in that town. There have been many threats to public schools throughout our country from atheistic groups from often other states about Christian symbols and songs. And number two, increasing animosity. OneNewsNow.com recently asked its internet readers, "What is the primary cause of the increasing animosity towards Christianity?" The readers said 40% anti-Christian media, 30% liberal public education, 14% political correctness, 12% indifference to religion, and 5% anti-Christian politicians. And then they asked the reason, is that the only reason why our culture is against Christianity? And the response is that maybe we might be part of the problem. There's a lackadaisical response or silence in the face of national moral decline. We are mirroring the world's values. There's no difference between the way Christians are living and non-Christians. There's a lot of hypocrisy. We have a good talk, but our walk does not match our talk. There's powerless living. There's anemic involvement in addressing the nation's problems. Third, the removal of Christian symbols. July 8, 2013, the St. Louis Cardinals removed religious symbols from the pitcher's mound following a fan's complaint. Michael Vines, a Jew who was watching TV, noticed that there appeared to be a cross and an ichthus, the sign of the fish, etched on the ground right next to where the pitcher pitches. And so he contacted a newspaper about that. The Cardinals' general manager, John Mozeliak, has ordered that they remove these symbols. There's a cross atop Mount Soledad in California that has been ruled an unconstitutional religious display on government land recently by a judge in San Diego. Just this last December, they have to remove that cross. Officials at Louisiana State University published a photo in which they removed the symbols of the Christian cross worn by students on their shirts during a football game. They photoshopped the photos, so the cross was not in those pictures. September 13th, 2013, a Christian ministry in Florida was ordered by the federal government to remove all of its religious symbols if they want any federal assistance feeding the poor. Number four, removal of Christianity from the military. And this is well documented. These are all just examples. You can find hundreds of them. And these are just some examples. Camp Marmol in northern Afghanistan said the removal of a cross from an army chapel has created a huge controversy. And at least one soldier called it a direct attack against Christianity and Judaism. A Pentagon spokesman said that the cross was removed after someone complained. He also said that the cross violated army regulations. June 2013, the Obama Department of Justice defunds a Young Marines chapter in Louisiana because their oath mentioned God, and another youth program because it permits a voluntary student-led prayer. December 2013, a naval facility required that two nativity scenes depicting the event that caused Christmas in the first place be removed from the base dining hall and be confined to the base chapel, thus disallowing the open public acknowledgement of this national federal holiday. October 2013, a counterintelligence briefing at Fort Hood tells soldiers that evangelical Christians are a threat to Americans and that for a soldier to donate to such a group was a punishable under military regulations. October 14, 2013, the military labeled the American Family Association a domestic hate group. May 2013, an Air Force officer was actually made to remove a personal Bible from his own desk because it might appear he was condoning that particular religion to which he belonged. Last year, it was reported that military chaplains were being ordered by the Pentagon to perform same-sex marriages, even though it violates their faith. In response, thousands of military chaplains said that this was one order that they would refuse to carry out. Then earlier this year, there was a new Pentagon order telling military chaplains that if they preached against sin, including homosexuality, they would be charged with sedition and treason. The Air Force has removed "So Help Me God" from the cadet oath. Just last Christmas, three VA hospitals refused to accept Christian or Christmas cards that mentioned Christ, or refused to let children sing Christmas carols for those who are in the hospital. There are many, many, many more examples of this. Why is our culture rejecting Christianity? Well, one is theological reasons. Christianity makes an exclusive claim that people don't like. John chapter 14, verse 6, Jesus answered, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me." And then Acts chapter 4, verse 12, "Salvation is found in no one else, for there is no other name under heaven given to mankind by which we must be saved." People don't like those exclusive claims because they think that God is love and God accepts everyone. And it doesn't matter what path you take, we can still find God. Another theological reason is doubting the miraculous in the age of science. Everything has to be explained. And so people are doubting that miracles even actually take place. Miracles can be explained scientifically, they claim. Another theological reason is religious pluralism. Christianity is seen as only one way to God, one way to heaven among many. It doesn't matter if you're a Muslim, a Buddhist, or whatever. You know, we all believe in the same God. You follow your religion, I'll follow mine, and we'll all be happy, and we'll all get there. That's called religious pluralism, where the lines begin to blur, and there is no distinct idea any further. There are, second, some intellectual reasons for this rejection of Christianity. One of these is that Christianity is viewed as being outdated, superstitious. It's what people believed 2,000 years ago. This is the 21st century, after all. We don't need that kind of stuff anymore. The Gospels are viewed as not historically accurate. They are a creation of the early church. Yes, there was a Jesus, but he died, and so his followers created this religion called Christianity. That is a growing movement and is being taught in universities around our country. Third, there are some moral reasons for this rejection of Christianity. People don't like to be told that their lifestyles are wrong or sinful. Who are you to tell me that I can't live this way? It's one of the strong arguments now that we hear all the time. I create my own path. I'm my own judge. You have no right or authority to judge who I am or what I do. Another moral reason is that immorality has become acceptable among people. Christians are viewed as having an old-fashioned ethic. Today, we can do whatever we want, whatever pleases us, whatever makes us feel good. And so nothing that challenges this is acceptable. Well, in this passage, Paul challenges us to get back to the basics. The church in Corinth faced many of these same kinds of issues. They were just a new small little part of the great big city of Corinth. The Corinthian church probably wasn't too much bigger than ours. There may have been several home churches, but they met in someone's home, and the homes weren't real big. They may have had a courtyard that could hold 40 to 60 people, and there may have been several of those scattered around Corinth, but we're not talking thousands of Christians here. We're talking dozens of Christians when we talk about the Corinthian church and most early churches. This is just the beginning. The Corinthian church was only a few years old. They were just beginning, and they faced some major challenges in their culture. Immorality was prevalent all over. Idolatry was all over. And Paul challenges the Corinthians, get back to the basic. And so we have to get back to the simple message of the cross. Paul preached a simple message in chapter 2, verse 2. For I resolved to know nothing while I was with you except Jesus Christ and him crucified. The message of the cross is what Paul preached. He didn't get into all these great big issues. He preached the cross. And when we preach the cross, everything else will fall into place. In chapter 15, Paul gives the other half of his message. Jesus was not only killed on the cross, he rose from the grave. Verses 1 to 4. So there's four key components to the Christian gospel. Jesus came, he died, he was buried, and he rose again. That is the core Christian gospel, and that is the message that Paul preached to the Corinthians. The core, our core doctrine, we cannot compromise on that message. It is something that we live or die with. It is not debated. It is dependent upon an historical event, something that actually took place in history. Paul goes on and says in chapter 15 that there are many believers who saw the risen Jesus. And Paul was one of those as well. He saw a vision of the risen Jesus on the road to Damascus. And so we have to base our faith on something that actually took place. This is not a myth. This is not something that a group of 12 men and, 120 or so people decided, okay, guys, let's come up with a new religion. No, it is based on something that actually happened. The Gospels are historically accurate about who Jesus was, what happened to him, what he taught and did. And so we are faced with the challenge of the cross. The cross shows God's power and wisdom. In chapter 1, Paul talks about how to the world around us, the message of the cross is foolishness and weakness. To the Jews of that day, it was a scandal to think that their Messiah had died on a cross. The cross was accursed. It was a very shameful It was one of the most painful ways to die in the ancient world. People were basically stripped naked. They were shamed because of that. They were hung on the cross, and often, as we see in the Gospels, nails were put into the flesh. Sometimes those nails would not hold the weight of the body, so they would tie up the arms or legs to kind of keep the person up there. It's usually not the nails or anything like that that would cause a person to die. Usually it was suffocation, because they would literally suffocate from not being able to breathe because of the weight of the arms. Another cause of death often was just exposure. The bodies were left up on the cross, and to add to the shame, the person would die and they would leave the body up there to decompose. And so the birds would come along and everything else. So it was a very gruesome way. And for the Jews to think that their Messiah had come and died on a cross was totally a scandal to them. For the Greeks, only common criminals got crucified on a cross. And so how can you have the Lord, the Master, the Creator of the universe die on a cross? It was foolishness. It was something that they just couldn't handle intellectually. And here comes Paul. And he says, the cross is the very power of the Almighty Creator of the universe. It is the very wisdom of the one who planned all things. That is a paradox, because the world sees one thing, and yet Christianity is proclaiming another. Go back to verse 18. For the message of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing. But for us who believe, there's the key. For us who believe, it is the power of God. It takes faith to accept this message. But when you begin to accept it, it begins to make more and more sense to you. And so the more I study the New Testament and all of Scripture, the more I realize that it was a very wise plan for Jesus to die on the cross. It all fits together. As you study Old Testament prophecy, as you study how the Old Testament Jews worshiped, and the whole sacrificial system, and the logic of it all, it begins to make sense. To realize that God created a path for life, but yet